Chapter 5. Petra almost wrenched it open and ran back out again, but she was being ridiculous. So these people were poor and from the smells unclean, but they offered what they had. She gathered her manners and thanked her hostess again. The woman grunted and waved her to a seat. A table took up half the room, with a crude chair at head and foot, and a bench down either side. But some wooden chests against the walls could also be seats. Petra walked to one of those, not liking the way the floor squished. It was covered with rushes, but clearly they lay over earth, and the rain was seeping up. These poor people. At least they had a fire burning in a hearth that made up most of a side wall. On either side, shabby curtains hung over arches that must lead into the other half of the house. They had food, too, for a cooking pot hung over the fire, attended by an ancient, humped-backed woman. The old woman was staring at Petra, if she could see out of eyes so pouched. Her yellowish skin lay thinly over bones, giving her an almost skeletal appearance. Petra found a smile and wished her a good evening. The woman grunted, swigged something from a flagon, and returned to her pot. Petra sat, trying to gather her cloak around her, both for warmth and to stop it trailing on the dirty floor. The few windows were high and shuttered, and she doubted they had any glass in them, for draughts wavered the solitary candle on the table. From the smell it was tallow, but there were other smells, and some, she feared, came from the cooking pot. Madame Goulard went through the left-hand arch, and Petra heard muffled voices. For a moment she was suspicious, but she remembered the two women who'd opened the gates. They'd be changing their wet clothing. They'd gone out in the rain to let in distressed travellers, even though fearful, because their men were away. These people were very good Samaritans, and she must remember that. Madame Goulard returned bearing a large earthenware jug and a leather pouch. She gave the pouch to the old woman and put the jug on the table. She took down a wooden beaker from a shelf and poured into it, then brought it to Petra. Petra thanked her, but had to ask, "What is it?" Travel had taught her that local food and drink could be peculiar.
Poiret.
Ah, the pear cider of northern France. Petra longed for good wine or coffee, but this was wholesome. Thank you. Most refreshing. I am Sister Immaculata.
Where are you from, then?
The woman asked, studying Petra with eyes almost as pouched as the crone's. She was fleshy rather than skeletal, but her skin too was sallow. Milan, Petra said.
That is in England.
Petra realized she should have given an English place, and was tempted to agree, but it was too strange a lie. No, madame. It is in Italy. Madame Goulard reared back.
Your brother claimed to be English.
Oh, we are, madame, but we have no convents in England, you see, so I had to travel to Italy to join one. The woman still frowned, and Petra was glad to see no crucifix here or other sign of devotion. My brother and I shouldn't have pressed on, but I weep to think my poor mother might die before I see her one last time. Madame Goulard still frowned, but then the other two women entered. They were about Petra's age, and unlike their elders, seemed healthy and cheerful. One wore a green skirt, the other a yellowish-brown one. Both wore dark red country bodices, laced in front, over plain shifts and wooden clogs on their feet. All the women wore clogs, and given the state of the floor, Petra wished she did too. The one in the green skirt stared at Petra and said, "Oh, but you are beautiful." It made Petra blush, but she could think of nothing to say other than, "Thank you." Brown Skirt poked a pointed elbow into her sister to remind her of her manners, and they both sat on a bench. But they kept flickering glances at Petra, as if she fascinated them. Of course, with most nuns living in cloister, they might never have seen one before. They were old enough to be married, but wore no rings. Petra wasn't entirely surprised. Green Skirt seemed a bit slow, and had large eyes that should have been appealing, but which put Petra disconcertingly in mind of a cow. Brown Skirt's eyes were small, and too close together, and when she smiled, she showed small, sharp, crooked rat's teeth. "Petra, you've never studied a rat's teeth. Be charitable." Promising to do penance, Petra smiled at both and said, "Good evening." Cow Eyes smiled back, but anxiously. The other showed those teeth. Perhaps neither was normal. This seemed a very unfortunate family. "Solette and Jizzy," Madame Goulard introduced. The slow one seemed to be Jizzy, and the sly one Solette. "And my mother attends the pot." Petra had seen the woman add things to the pot, some herbs from the pouch and more vegetables, trying to make their poor meal stretch to 5 more mouths. Petra wished they had some food to offer. "That is a dog your brother has?" Madame Goulard asked. Petra was still having trouble with the dialect. "Yes. An absurd thing, is she not?" "Pretty collar. Your brother, he is a rich lord." Were they planning to demand an outrageous amount for a night's shelter? "We're simple people, really, but we will pay generously for your hospitality."
"Good, good.
Come, sister, I'll show you where you'll sleep." Petra followed her through the right-hand curtain, praying for better than she expected. She found herself in a room containing just one bed. The bed was low and large, and she saw no doors or stairs that could lead to other rooms. She was going to have to share one bed with the whole family. But Madame Goulard walked toward the back wall, which was entirely covered by dark red curtains. Petra hurried after. Thank God. The woman parted the curtains in the middle to reveal something quite like a nun's cell, with other curtains making side walls. The end of the room held curtain sleeping alcoves. Perhaps 5 of them? Peculiar, but Petra could have cried hallelujah with relief. She hurried forward but halted, hit by yet more smells. The prevailing damp and rot was joined by unwashed sheets, old spilled wine, perhaps even urine, and something else. A rank, musty odour that turned her stomach. "Oh, I..."
"What?"
Inspiration flew to Petra like an angel. "I cannot sleep in a room without an open window. I'm sorry, it is the rule of my order. I must be ready for God to take me at any moment."
"God needs a window?"
the woman asked with surprising perception. Petra spread her hands. "It is the rule. I will return to my brother. Please." But Madame Goulard said,
"That wouldn't be right, sister,"
and stumped off to the right. The woman dragged back the curtain at the end of the row to reveal an identical sleeping space. It was as filthy but had a shuttered window. Petra opened the shutters and inhaled damp evening air. "Thank you, madame. God bless your holy kindness." The woman grunted but seemed to expect Petra to return to the kitchen. Petra needed a moment to pull herself together. "I have a few prayers, I must say, if you don't mind." Mayor Goulart shrugged.
I'll send for you when the meal's ready.
She left, dragging the curtain closed behind her, but at least left the candle. Petra pulled back the coverlet, but saw, as feared, a stained sheet. She hastily covered it again. She'd sleep on top of the coverlet, wrapped in her cloak. It would be chilly, but she could offer up all her sufferings as penance for her many sins. Especially that of responding to Robin Bonchurch's kiss. Not only was it foolish, it was wrong. She might not truly be a nun, but she'd worn the habit for 3 years, and had always believed that as long as she did so, she should follow the rule of the community of Saint Veronica, the rule of poverty, chastity, and obedience. Yes, she'd made the right choice to avoid night out there with that man and temptation. She went to the window and inhaled fresh air, then laughed to herself. In other circumstances, the smell of a farmyard would not have been so welcome. Her spurious brother, Robin, was right. She should have stayed with Lady Sodworth. Even though she'd have had to take care of the little monsters, she'd be warm and fed. As for Vartzi, she must have imagined him. The world wasn't short of round men of medium height who dressed plainly. But she'd leapt to a conclusion, acted impetuously, and was being suitably punished. She had a cold, damp, dirty night ahead of her. The view outside was equally forbidding. The walls of the old house were feet thick, and the window chest high, restricting her view to the rectangle in front of her. All she could see was mud, sheds, and the high wall with cloudy twilight beyond. Were the men still out there? Ridiculous to think they weren't, but she had to check. She hooked her arms over the sill, jumped, and pulled herself up to balance there. Laughter almost tipped her over. If her hostess returned, how could she explain this? Obligatory convent exercises? Laughter died because it hurt her ribs, but she had the reassuring glimpse she sought. Reassuring but painful. 4 shapes sat around a cheery fire. When they laughed, she longed to be with them. She freed one arm to wave, but no one saw her, so she slid back down to her feet and brushed flaked stone off her habit, stupidly close to tears. You looked like a medieval princess in a tower pleading for rescue. She spun around, and there he was, arms on the sill, looking in, dimples in his cheeks. Coquette sat on the sill at his elbow, ears twitching. Petra could almost imagine the dog was wrinkling her nose at the smell. What are you doing here? Petra asked, keeping her voice low. She didn't want to be heard in the kitchen. Coquette saw you wave and insisted. I think she misses female company. Petra stroked the pretty dog. I doubt it. It's you she loves. Then she's a fool. If there was any meat on her, I'd sell her for soup. Petra shook her head at him, but she was smiling just for the pleasure of his company. You take good care of her. I'm a dutiful fellow, burdened by desirous females. So, what do you desire, princess? Rescue? She remembered why she'd needed to be away from him for this night. No, of course not. He peered past her. Not the most inviting chamber. They're poor. The poor can be clean. So can the rich, and they're often not. True enough. Are you all right? He asked seriously. Petra eased back the curtain to be sure no one was in the room beyond. When she turned back, his eyes were watchful. Why the caution? I don't want to hurt their feelings. But?
They're a strange lot.
Strange? In what way?
I don't want to be unkind, but one of the daughters might be simple, and the other, I don't know.
She touched her head.
Probably too many cousins marrying.
Probably,
though in fact they're not much alike.
They're just the three women.
No, there's a grandmother. She's horribly hunched, poor thing, and drinks, perhaps to kill the pain. They're an unfortunate family.
He was leaning his arms on one side of the sill, she on the other, so their faces were only a foot away. The tallow light was dim, but if anything, it cast drama onto the elegant lines of his face and lips. Lips she remembered against hers.
"Something's the matter," he said.
"You."
But Petra only said,
"Tiredness, probably, but I don't expect to sleep well."
He rested his hand on hers. "I'll do better for you tomorrow. State your wish, princess."
Petra knew she should pull away from that warm touch, but she needed human contact right now.
"A palace," she said lightly, but then shook her head.
"A clean, well-aired bed will do, in a clean room, a room entirely to myself."
"Not quite what I had in mind," he said. But the light humour in it stole offence.
"We'll stop early tomorrow to be sure of it. Perhaps in Montreuil. The luxury of the Cour de France should compensate for this."
"The French court?" she asked, puzzled.
"It's a hostelry. A very grand one."
"I don't require grand. I'd rather we made haste to England."
"Why? Why the hurry?"
Petra shook her head.
"Don't pry at me now. I don't have the wit to amuse."
His hand tightened slightly in comfort.
"Very well. But later, after you've had a good night's sleep and a clean, well-aired bed entirely to yourself..."
"Even then, you won't get my secret, sir. Not even with torture."
"It wasn't torture I had in mind."
She moved her hand away, but he captured it and raised it to his warm lips.
"Trust me, Petronilla mia. Whatever your urgent purpose in England, you will need me."
Her breath felt thin, but she tugged.
"Your price will always be too high."
He released her.
"See? I set you free. I will never force you to anything. But reality will. I predict failure if you escape from me."
If the 2-feet-thick wall hadn't been between them, she might have hit him.
"How can I be free if I must escape?"
His eyes met hers.
"Alas, you're right. I'll try to respect your wishes."
He drew back, taking his dog.
"Good night, sweet lady of the secrets."
Petra watched him disappear into the darkness, fighting an urge to climb out after him, but also wishing she could flee him now. She had pursued her plan thus far, and made it almost to England. She only needed Robin Bonchurch to get her there, and then she would escape him. She had a dagger in her pouch and 20 guineas hidden in the end boards of her prayer book. Once in England, she would find her father, and then all would be well. She hoped and prayed.